Welcome to episode number 13, the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for downloading the show again. Welcome my co-hosts, Julian Spence and Bradley Croker. How are we going, fellas?
We're going well.
That's good, Brad.
Back to work today, Brady, so not so great.
I wasn't sure if you went back today as well. Yeah, it was a bit of a shock to the system, wasn't it?
Yeah, mind you, the first week back's just purely staff, so it's a good way to ease back into it. Students next week.
Yeah, you could do a moose on the loose 1 week, Julian, about how soft secondary school teachers are. We're going back with kids tomorrow, just to put it in a bit of context.
I think just teachers in general could cop a bit of a hammering. Yeah. You've been off for like 6 weeks. No one gets that time off.
Yeah. True. It's good for training, though. It's good for training. So at least when you're training for a marathon on school holidays, it makes it like feel like you're actually doing something on the extended break. But it's been a big week for all three of us. I think Julian's gone and collected a couple of medals down at Vic Country Champs. Brad, I reckon you've dropped the most impressive week of your training ever. And, I've been doing some testing on some treadmill and tried to do a marathon-specific session. So we've got plenty to talk about tonight.
Yeah, been good to watch.
Yeah, and a bit of news. Do you want to kick us off, Julian? You got the medals hanging around your neck as we Skype in?
Oh, no, they're at the engravers. Had to take them down, get sorted early before I forget what they're for. No, obviously, Country Champs was on this weekend in Ballarat, and Country Champs is like all the country regional clubs come together, and the way that I saw it, it's almost like a championship for the punters that won't get to go to other championships. That's how I saw it. So, like, if you're not good enough to go to nationals, we can go and race for some medals at the country champs. That's the way I looked at it, and that's how everyone else sort of seemed to take it as well. It was 3 days, Friday, like it was really hot. The weather was obviously like 39, 40. So they split the days up to Friday morning, Friday arvo, or Friday evening with big gap in the middle. And they did the same thing Saturday. And then on Sunday morning, it was pretty hot. They did it up until around 2 o'clock. So super hot every single day, pretty harsh conditions out there. And I was really impressed with how it was all run. The nighttime events got a lot of support, like watching the 1500s and then the 400s before the 10K on Saturday night. Heaps of people at the track, all the marquees out, all the athletes, even if they weren't competing, were still there watching. And it was a really good atmosphere. It was kind of almost uplifting to see, and it gave us a little bit more hope for local athletics. Everyone that was there walked away and thought, geez, it can still work, local athletics. So that was really good. On Friday night was the 5K, which was the event that I wanted to do the best at. Like, that's what I wanted to have a go at, and mainly because I knew the field was stronger. And also it was the first race of the weekend, so you can put a little bit more in the first race. It was a really good race. We had quite a solid pack from lap one. The guys up the front, Frankie Conway and Charlie Park, a couple of Melbourne Uni guys that ran it as Metro athletes can run as invitation there, so they were doing that, out to have a good hit out in a 5K. And they went out in around about 70 second pace, and it kind of, there was a group of us, a fella from Bendigo and Craig Huffer, who is pretty well-renowned 1500 meter, 800 meter guy, was also in the pack. He's been in America for like 10 years or something as a student athlete, and then as an athlete, and then maybe even coaching now over there. I'm not entirely sure, but I remember following his career pretty closely. I think he's run 3:36 for the 1500 meters. And earlier that day, actually, he'd won the 800 in 1:50. So clearly very fit and very fast. So the pack went through 3K in 8:56. And at that stage, we kind of knew it wasn't going to be a very fast time, because it was still a pretty warm night. The fact that it was maybe a championship race had a couple of fellas not wanting to do the pace setting as much, or maybe not doing as much work because they wanted to get a medal rather than a time. And I think the guys up the front, the Melbourne Uni guys, they didn't have the best races. So the pace dropped pretty quickly, and neither Craig or myself went around to pick it up until I went around with, I think it was about five laps to go. So knowing that Craig was, he's obviously way, way faster than I am, I thought the only way for me to have a chance at beating him was to pick the pace up from further out. So I kind of went to the front as we went around with 2K left. We were running about 71s or so, 72s, and the first lap that I went to the front was 66. And then the boys, the Melbourne Uni fellas, kind of dropped off, and it was just me and Craig for the next five laps, basically, or four laps after that. He was right on my shoulder. As I went around the pack, like, I could hear Frankie breathing really hard, and I thought, oh, he's on his limit at the 71s at that stage. I thought, oh, he probably won't be able to handle it. But I also listened to Craig as I went around him, and he was actually breathing pretty hard as well. He might have been putting that on. Like, he, obviously, great racer, been in a lot of track races. As I went around, I thought, geez, he sounds like he's laboring. And it gave me a little bit of hope that if I put a hard enough surge from far enough out, I'd be a chance. So I went around and pushed it for the next four laps, basically. Or for the next three laps, I was in front. He was just on my shoulder. He was very close. Like, he was pretty much, like, letting me know he was there. He wasn't behind me. He was just to the side and behind me. So
just whispering,
I knew he was
here.
Pretty much, I could hear everything, like every one of his footsteps. Tim Crosby, actually very good on the microphone. I could hear him commentating at the time, sort of letting me know that Craig was a 150, 800-meter runner and I should get rid of him as quickly as I could. But I couldn't. And so we had two laps to go. As we went around, he didn't just go around to the front. At 700 meters, he put a very fast surge in, and I think that was also like a sign of his experience racing, that he pretty much ran so fast for about 40 or 50 meters that I literally couldn't keep up, not just like from a fitness perspective, but from a leg speed perspective. He put this surge in where he just gapped me, and I was belting along as hard as I could, but I couldn't match his speed. And then from there, that effort, that surge that I put in, I was not much chance of ever getting back to him after that. And he just gradually, after that initial surge, he just gradually wound it up, and we pretty much put, I think it was about 8 or 9 seconds. Maybe I'd have to check, but about 9 seconds, maybe, over 700 meters. So he ended up running 14:28, maybe, and I ran 14:37, and so the last 2K for me was 5:40, which means the last 2K for him must have been around 5:30 or 5:31 or something, which is very fast.
Solid stuff. Because I remember checking the results and just being like, oh, yeah, he's kind of put a bit of time into you, but I didn't realize that was all in the last 700 meters.
Yeah, 700. He is taken off. Like, I was really happy with how I ran. I don't think I could have gone from 3K. I couldn't have run harder. Like, in retrospect, which is really easy, I should have gone like 8 laps to go. As soon as a few slow laps came through, I should have gone, but it was a pretty warm night. I didn't really know what was like. I was pretty comfortable to sit back there and have. You know, sometimes it's fun to just sort of let things go a little bit, and I didn't really care about the time. Like, I wanted to have a crack at it, but once it was hot and stuff, I just thought, oh, it's not going to be a night for times. But yeah, I would have gone earlier if I could have.
What shoes did you race in?
Oh, good question.
Centers.
Oh, for a 5K. Know,
on the track. Yeah. I'd rate her for 15. I hate spikes. Like, I just don't like them. I've got the wrong stride for it. I pull up sore. I knew I was running the 10K the next night, so I didn't want to cook myself with the carbs or anything. And I've just never, ever liked running in spikes. And even in the flats, like, I ran a session in the flats during the week, some 200s. And I just thought, shit, I'm just so much more comfortable in the 4%ers. Like, even if 400-meter repeats, I'd rather do it in 4%ers. So I found my shoe. From everything.
Very good. Do you want to, I was going to say, instead of taking us through the whole week, just take us straight at the 10K, because things didn't quite pan out the same way that night.
Yeah, well, I've been a bit crooked through the week, like, just really tired and fatigued. Been real achy. Every run I went on felt like shit. So I was actually really, like, surprised the 5K went so well. I'd had a few, like, stomach aches during the day. Maybe the night before, I was kind of hot in bed, like, a bit fevery. But I woke up all right, and I was actually had a busy day in store, which was good because it kind of took my mind off things. And then on Saturday morning after the 5K, like, the race finished at about 10 o'clock. After you cool down, get changed, go to the you got to find some food at, like, 11:30-odd. And you're in Ballarat, like, there's McDonald's open, basically. So went to McDonald's, ate some absolute shit. Well, I mean, there's not that many other options there. But just felt really gross, felt really tired. Like, I thought, oh, this race has nailed me. When I think it was actually me being sick, having a virus. So I slept, took my Fenibut, got some super sleep. Woke up Saturday morning, just, like, felt amazing after that sleep. But I did miss a chance to go to – I was going to go down and work at the country champs. So too tired for that, too late when I woke up. But went out for a jog, felt great. And then just a downward slide during the day, just got sicker and sicker, like, couldn't leave the bathroom, like, for fear of not making it to it ever again, because I had some sort of stomach upset. I was basically, like, going to the toilet was like turning a tap on and then turning it off, and then I'd come back and I'd have to turn the tap on again. It was pretty gnarly. And I don't know why I wanted to run the race, but I thought, surely I've got rid of everything in my guts by now. Like, there's no way I'll need to go again. But I had to go twice in the warm-up. I thought, oh, maybe nerves. I was basically talking myself that it wasn't an issue.
Oh, nerves at a big country 10K.
Yeah, I was nervous that I was going to shit myself during the race. That was what I was most nervous about. And but I got out there. There was a pack of maybe three of us. We were running very slowly. And all of a sudden, like, no one wanted to lead. The other guys were just looking around thinking, I don't know, it was really weird. But I just ran one pretty medium pace lap, and it was a little too much for the other guys. They dropped off, and so I didn't look at my watch once. I just kept jogging. Well, not jogging. It was a threshold, basically. I was at about the same threshold heart rate that I would do my thresholds on Saturday at. So that felt good. Like, I didn't feel fast at all. I was really happy with how the leg felt and how the heart rate was. But about 10 laps to go, I just started to think, oh, I could really go to the bathroom right now. And every single lap, it kind of got a little bit worse. And it would get worse on one corner where there was no one around. And I would think, oh, God, I just got to go to the – like, I've got to run to the bushes over there. We've all had it. I don't think there's a runner out there who's never felt that. But on a track, when you're constantly, like, in the eyesight, like, in a race, you could stop behind a tree or a car or whatever, you could get it done. But on a track, it's like, there is nowhere to go. And you see the same person every time when you run around, and you're like, oh, I could never do that in front of them. Like, they'll be watching me the whole time. So it was one of the longest 10 laps of my life. I finally got to the finish, like hit stop on my watch, didn't break stride, ran straight up to the dunnies. Get in the dunnies, they're both occupied. Banging on the door like, come on, get out of there. Just scaring the shit out of someone in the toilet. So I'm like screaming at him, swearing at him to get out. The bloke eventually, Clary, who pulled out of the race earlier, he was one of them in there, and he'd had stomach upset too. But I jumped in and just like unleashed, and then went for a warm up, went for a cool down, had to go straight back to the toilet pretty much straight away. Knew something was really wrong by then. And then for the next like 15, 20 minutes before presentation, just spent the time on my knees, like feeling like I need to throw up, and then on the seat throwing up. And I was shivering, like I was had nausea, I was feverish, just sitting there waiting to get my medal. Got my medal, got in the car, nearly passed out on the way home. Bree, she gave me some like tea, had a little bit of toast, and then Fenerbahce, sleep, poof, out, done. And then could barely touch any food the next day. I was so sensitive in the gut, but I didn't. The issues are gone now. So, yeah, exciting stuff.
thanks for that detailed recap. That was Brad Ryder. You'd be hooking into us about how stupid it was to race under those conditions. Yeah, you've just done exactly that.
Well, I didn't get my country. You know, when you win a country champs, you get a small number the next year for AV. I had to get my small number next year for AV. I don't want one of those like 20,456. I want number 301 or something like that.
It's all about image with this boy, Brad, I reckon.
Yeah, geez, hearing that recap, I feel like I've just run 10K.
We're 15 minutes in. Running.
And he reckons I love talking about running. Jeez.
One of my proudest moments getting to that finish line without leaking down the back.
Gives a 15-minute recap of two races. I don't even know what time he finished either of those races in. Didn't even tell us the finishing times.
Yeah, exactly. what time did you run?
I told you already. 14:37, and the 10K was 32:20.
Oh, I must have zoned out when you said the 5K one.
Yeah.
Man, that was
There was more exciting news than the time, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's like the Road to Berlin finish line episode all over again.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that.
That went for... No. I'm just talking about the amount of time we've spent on one race.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we can cut into Brad's time. He doesn't like talking about running.
No.
Brad, I reckon, over to you. But yeah, the most impressive week you've ever put together. You are in a really good spot with 5 weeks to go, 4 weeks to go, five weeks to go.
Yeah, 5 weeks, yeah. So it's just under 5 weeks now that we're recording it. So my week started off, so Monday morning, Julian was still in town, so took him and Bree out to Mulligan's for another run, and a few of Dick Telford's boys came along. So we actually had a really good group. There was about, six of us, Julian, I think?
Yeah, about that.
So that was a nice leisurely, close to 70 minutes at sort of 4:30s.
Brad, is it safe to say you're running a lot more with other people these days?
Yeah, Mulligan's has turned, I think it's more sweet. Just I've promoted Mulligan's. And it's, it seems to be a lot more popular these days.
Yeah. I think you've got growing popularity as well, though. Few boys taking along.
Yeah, in the last week, I've pretty much run with someone every day, which is unheard of. So that was Monday, and then Tuesday morning, got out to Mulligan's again for my hour tempo over the hills, and Dan Wallace came out for that with me. So the emphasis here was really just running the hills super hard and not doing as much on the downs and the flats. Felt really good, ran sort of 3:30s for the hour. My heart rate averaged under 160, which is the lowest it's been for that sort of session. So by the time I did sort of warm up and cool down, it was, 25K or so. I did just over 8K in the afternoon, so I went out to the AIS and Warmed up with Dick Telford's guys. It was super hot. Then Wednesday morning, got out for 45 minutes at Mulligan's before meeting Chris Hamer and a couple other Dix boys, and ran another 70 minutes with them. So I ended up getting through an hour 50, which was just over 25K, and that was just before I interviewed Chris for the podcast. Then we're up to Thursday. So Thursday was a pretty light day, especially after Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I had a hard session on Friday. So it was just 10.5K in the morning, 4:26s, and then just over 8K at 4:28s in the afternoon. So quite easy for me, I guess, running close to 4:30s. And then Friday morning was, I guess, sort of a bit of a marathon type session. It was 4x4K with a 2-minute float. And I actually had Viv out on the bike for that one. Just from a drinks point of view, I wanted to actually start taking on some nutrition. So the session went really well. So each 4K was between 3:13 and 3:15 kilometre pace, and the 2-minute floats were, I'm guessing, around 3:40s to 3:50s, I guess. So the whole session was 18.3K in an hour at 3:17s. And in terms of nutrition, I was pretty much having a drink every 5K as if it was like a marathon. So I went through, I had a gel and 250 mils of electrolyte at 5K. I had about 200 mils of sports drink at 10K. And then I had another gel and some water at 15K. So over the whole hour, it would have been like 75 grams of carbs and 700 mils of water, and which is quite a lot, but my gut seemed to handle it. And felt really strong at the end of it. Could have probably done another rep, I reckon. What was my heart rate for that one? I think it was probably mid to low 160s average. Just bring it up.
Have you seen the next comment on the next run on his Strava, Julian?
163 average it was, for that. So,
I like that.
In a good spot there. Hey, were you taking those drinks when you were running like 3:14, 3:15 pace then as well?
So what I did
that's impressive.
Viv was around, and I would basically get her, when we're coming up to 5K, 10K and 15K, I'd get her to actually take off up the road and then take a drink out and hand it to me as I'm running past. Just to, I guess, replicate sort of off a drink station. And I actually carried those, they were in those little pop tops, and I held on to them up to 2 kilometres, just sipped on it for a couple of K to get it down. But I didn't have any upset stomach and, seemed to handle that really well. That was Friday. Saturday was just 65 minutes in the morning.
What about the cool down from Thursday, Friday? Post-session jog at 3:57.
So 3:57 average for the cool down. Oh, well, I was just running, just get it done. Bang the legs up a bit more.
Julian predicted this the other week. Sean Crichton's comment on there.
Sub
4-minute Ks, don't you mean post-jog session? But sad face.
Anyway.
Move on.
So Saturday morning then was 65 minutes at 4:30s, and then just 35 minutes in the afternoon with some of those 10-second hill sprints. Just wanted to try and keep a bit of fatigue in the legs for the Sunday session that I had planned. So that was yesterday, which... met a couple of Dix boys for the first part of the run and did 2 hours averaging 4:08s. So it was quite leisurely to start with, but probably about halfway, probably about 14K, started to sort of wind it up a little bit because I wanted to be a bit fatigued before I started my tempo. So pretty much from the last 10K was probably about 38 minutes for that, which heart rate was only 133 for that 29K. And then I put on the 4%ers and did a 5K in 16:03. And so Viv was on the bike just clearing the way around the path, just because it's quite busy on a Sunday morning around there. What was encouraging there was I didn't have any nutrition throughout the whole run. I had a couple of pieces of toast beforehand, but no gels and really no water at all for the whole session. So, yeah, and that was like 180K week. So, yeah, I was pretty happy with how it all went. And, yeah, wore the 4%ers for the first time as well.
What'd you think?
Yeah, they're taking a while to get used to. Like, I'm certainly running well in them, but they're different. I've been trying to work out how to explain what they felt like for me the first time, and I'd almost say, you know, those little square foam mats that you have in the gym that people often use for a bit of like ankle stability and things like that. Like to me, I felt like I was running on those. Like that's sort of how cushioned it was, and I guess you don't feel the road under you as much because of that cushion, which I'm always used to racing flats, sort of feeling that road underneath me. So it's taken a little bit to get used to. So I wore them for the 4x4K session. But then when I put them on for the 5K at the end of my long run yesterday, I probably felt a bit better in them, and I was just amazed at how easy I was able to run like 16-minute 5K. So although they feel a bit funny, yeah, they're certainly doing a good job.
So. Shut up, Russell.
Yeah. Few dogs.
That's not my dog. That's the next door neighbour.
Next door neighbour dog firing up.
The 4%ers, they're like maybe for a few people like myself, they feel good over short distances. But the biggest benefit is how you feel at the end of a marathon. Like that's where you're going to appreciate that shoe.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'll definitely wear them for the marathon. But you know what I'm trying to say though, Julian, that they feel like when you're used to having racing flats on, they just take a little bit to get used to, especially with that thicker heel and everything.
Yeah, I've done a lot of like you're obviously a racing flat spike guy. I used to run marathons in big heavy cushion trainers, so we come from different sides of the track. I've always worn bigger shoes. It doesn't feel that odd to me.
Yeah, look, if I can run 16 minutes at the end of a long run, I'm definitely, even though they feel a bit weird, I'm definitely going to wear them for the marathon. And a few more sessions, I'll probably get used to them a bit better as well.
Yeah, cool.
I like it.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good week. Good work. Yeah, you're ticking a few boxes there. My week was my big one. I had a few dramas with my week this week. I'll get onto that in a second. But started off with an easy 16K in at 4:48 kind of K pace on Monday morning with 7K in the afternoon at 4:47s, which was good. Then I headed down to Melbourne. I spoke about at the end of last week's show and did some testing at Monash University, which was interesting. All up, it was 35K on the treadmill. I was doing blood lactate before and after and every 30 minutes, and they were also taking my blood glucose levels every 30 minutes as well, and I was getting on the scales every 30 minutes. And then they'd put this mask over my mouth and a peg over my nose, and I don't know what exactly they were testing. I haven't got the full report yet, but I'm looking forward to getting it. But they were testing, I think, how many carbs compared to fats I was burning when I was running. So pretty much did 2 hours at about 4:10 to 4:15 pace, and then they were hoping to kick it down when I got to 2 hours to about marathon pace, but they weren't happy with my readings. I think I had to burn a few more glucose or glycogen or whatever. I'm not a scientist. I don't really know what's happening here until they tell me the report. You might know a bit more, Julian, with your background. But yeah, they weren't happy at 2 hours, so they made me go for another 15 minutes. Then they were happy, and then I did about 12 minutes at marathon pace at the end. And yeah, they got me off again, and then tested the. I'd had to do that with that mask on that whole last 12 minutes, and then got me off to do the blood test and stuff again, which was quite interesting. A bit of a mind game sitting on a treadmill for that long, and they were giving me 90 grams of carbs to try and get down every hour, so pretty much set me up with a drink bottle and said that needs to be done by 20 minutes and then 40 minutes and then 60 minutes again. So every time it had 30 grams of I think it was mixed carbs in it, so most of it glucose and then a bit of fructose as well. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing the report from that. But, yeah, I was pretty cooked when I come off there. It was just, yeah, I'm not sure if you guys have ever been on the treadmill that long before, but you just feel drained because I think you're sweating a bit more in there and it just, yeah, I don't know, it just felt really dirty. And I was pretty happy to get back to our accommodation in Melbourne and have a bit of food and go to bed. I was quite exhausted from that one. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday, just back in Echuca, did an easy 15K jog. Thursday, had quarters on the agenda and had a few dramas there. Went to my local athletics track and the Lions have disappeared. Obviously, Little Ats is not at the moment. They must be still on their Christmas break, so we don't have any spray paint on the Lions. So I took the measuring wheel out to the industrial estate to make sure I was doing some legitimate 400-meter repeats and kind of set all those up and put cones down. I actually took a can of spray paint out there, which I'll get to that in a minute, to spray paint some gutters, but didn't do that, just put some cones down. I was in my first one. I was kind of heading down this industrial estate road in the opposite direction to the industrial estate dogs, and I'm kind of heading towards this paddock, and I can see these dogs running around this paddock, and I was like, oh, that's strange. I've never really seen dogs sprinting through that paddock before, and didn't think much of it, and then did my little U-turn and went back up the road for my second 400 metres, and then after I'd turned at the second one and started back in the direction I did the first one, I had these three industrial estate dogs coming up at me and just yapping away, and they're never going to bite you, but they're just the ones that have a whole lot of grit and that's just like they want to take out your ankles. So I had to pack up, stop the watch, pack up, picked up my cones, which took me about 10 minutes to measure out, drove a couple of blocks away to the other side of the industrial estate and got the wheel back out and measured the 400 metres and turnaround points again, and then banged out quarters in about 15:02, but I was pretty mentally over it by then. The 400s are in about 69 and the 200 floats are in about 43, so that was a good progression off last week considering I'd already done a couple. Easy running on Friday, easy running on Saturday, and then my big session for the week was the 5x5K with a 1K float. Pretty much ran the 5Ks in 17 minutes, about 325K pace. The heart rate was pretty much around 160 for most of those 5K efforts and ended up with 30K at 327K pace. Was really hot though. It was 26 degrees when we started. We started at 6 a.m. the actual session. I was warming up at 5:30. And we went, industrial estate's out of action now because of those dogs. So we went out the main street of Echuca, which is about 5K from one end to the other end. And, spent the morning with a couple of blokes on the bike, Stevie Gray and Anthony Farrett. They're good blokes. They were pacing me through. And, not a bad session. I was happy with that. Did have to have a toilet stop, similar to what you were talking about before, Julian. Was just getting a bit of an upstep stomach, about 13K. And luckily was running past one of the local Lions parks and could drop in there for a quick toilet stop and, yeah, finish that one. But heart rate data was positive, but I was pretty just exhausted again from the heat afterwards. I had plans to do about 3 or 4K warm-up, but I just did a K super slow and I was just sweaty and thirsty and really dry that I thought I'd pull it there and come home and jumped in the pool and, yeah, had a bit of liquid. But an eventful week for me, and just to top it off, last night we were back at school today. As Brad mentioned, I went to do the weekly supermarket shopping last night, Sunday night, and went to get in my car, which is parked out the front of my house, and the spray paint can that I'd actually taken out to the industrial estate on the Tuesday had actually blown up in the back seat of my car, and I had spray paint like pretty much all through like the inside of my car, like it's absolutely cooked. My car's a bit of an old like Commodore, like I'm never going to sell it or anything like that. It's on its last legs, but it was a bit of a icing on the cake for just how dreadful it was out there Thursday trying to organise this session. And now that spray paint can, it looks like someone had been murdered in there. We had to get the terps out and full on wipe down the windows to make it roadworthy again. I drove to work today with all the windows down because the fumes are just so strong in there. Lucky I wasn't driving it when it happened, but happy to see the end of that week. It was a pretty nice week, 2 weeks to go, and happy to see this cool change coming through, because I think we've had 14 days, someone told me today, where it's been in between 37 and 44. So I'm well and truly overrunning in the heat and hoping when I get to, just got an email from Wayne Larden about an hour ago just to remind me to pack some cold clothes for Japan, because it's predicted to be in between about 6 and 10. Looking forward to getting there, and hopefully it feels good in the cold weather.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. Like, that's some serious altitude-style training.
Yeah, that's like, what they. Because it's just back to back. Like you just don't get any respite from it. That's what's killing me.
I mean, you'll slowly get used to it, but it's like being at altitude. Like you get used to it, but you still have to adjust what you're doing.
I think it was good talking to you guys before I did that 5x5K. And like that's, I've only done that session twice before, and this time was by far the slowest one. But I think instead of focusing on time and focusing on effort and keeping the heart rate in the right zone and just trying not to overcook it early. I think you said, Julian, you're just like, you don't want to go out there and smash this one. You just got to kind of get it done. And yeah, it was positive to, get it finished. It felt okay. Struggled to get, I mixed up my drinks too strong. I pretty much put full Powerade in them and I just didn't feel like drinking them. So I only got about, I think 150 mils down for the whole day. It just wasn't sitting well in my stomach, which was, yeah, giving me a bit of an indication of what not to do come race day.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting when you get your results back from that treading session.
I'll forward through to you. Well, I was hoping by the end of last week, because it was a straight day holiday, they weren't working Friday. So, yeah, I was hoping today, actually. But, yeah, it was really good. I really recommend it. Chris and Steph, they were really good to talk to and knew their stuff. And, yeah, it felt like it's a weird thing. You feel like a bit of a lab rat, but at the same time you feel like a bit of a VIP because you do so much running and training by yourself when no one gives two hoots about you, and all of a sudden these people want to take your blood every 30 minutes and weigh you, and you feel like the special, you're getting special treatment while you're in there. So I couldn't highly recommend it more for, yeah, people serious about understanding their own body and what they need to be filling up with to figure out what they burn. It's really, I think, worthwhile before I've seen the report, but I'm sure it's going to be good.
Yeah, we'll see.
Stephanie actually knew Blake, which was good. I walked in and she said, I've been talking to Blake, and he said you were coming in. So that was small world stuff. Yeah.
Stephanie Gaskell.
That's her.
Gaskell, yeah.
A trail runner, I think, pretty credentialed, didn't she?
I'm not sure. Mm. I just know that Blake knows a dietitian. She a dietitian or a nutritionist or something?
I'm not 100% sure. I think Chris, from what I can gather, Chris was kind of running it, and Steph was maybe, I'm not sure if she'd been in that process before and might have been picking up and learning some things and, taking photos of the protocol and trying to pick up as much as she can. So yeah. Not sure if she's still training.
She's a sports dietitian.
Yeah. Yep, so that was good. So, yeah, looking forward, pretty heavy week. Like, you know, the last 7 days, it was 35K with a, you know, 3 or 4K kick down on a treadmill, a 5x5K and a decent quarter session. So I'm nearly done, 13 days to go, and, yeah, looking forward to what's to come.
Yeah, that'd be exciting.
Yeah, it's coming around really quick. I'm really enjoying, like, even just going back to work today, and I'm just like, yeah, I get to go to Japan next Friday. And they're like, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of a cool thing to be able to say. That's enough of our own running news, boys. I think we've covered a lot about ourselves tonight. It's time to start talking about some other people. And the Dubai Marathon was probably the story of the week. Did either of you boys catch it live?
Nah.
Not worry about that. Too busy working, Julian, eh?
What day was it?
Actually, you would have been getting ready for the Vic Country 5K Friday.
Yeah. I mean, I knew it was going to be fast, but, it's pretty rare you sit at home. I don't have much time sitting at home watching something like this, unless it's very late at night, which sometimes is better like that. You can lay in bed and watch it.
Mm. They used to always have it on Fox live. I remember a couple of years ago watching it live on a Friday afternoon, but I don't think they have it live anymore on Foxtel.
Yeah. Mm. Wow, it was pretty insane finishing times. They had six men between 2 hours and 4 minutes. And 2 hours and 4 minutes and 15 seconds. Won by Mozanet Geronmu, which I'd never heard of him before in my life, but I did some Google and he's quite a credentialed runner. I think he's ran a low 59 minutes for the half marathon. So had most of those guys. They were all, which comes to another probably topic, but these elite Ethiopian distance runners who feels like they got no personality whatsoever. We're on a running podcast. I follow running news every day of the week. I'm a runner, yet I don't know these amazing athletes who can run 2 hours and 4 minutes. Kind of shows that maybe the profiling of these elite guys, or maybe there's just so many of them, it's hard to keep track of them. What are your boys' thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I don't...
I think there's so many guys that can run quick that unless there's somebody like Kipchoge that's constantly winning the majors, then, yeah, you don't really you don't really know who they are.
Yeah, so this guy was third at Berlin. We were standing about a metre from him when we raced there last year. Never heard of him before. Still didn't even recognise the name.
Oh, I didn't recognise the name either.
He ran 2:06 at Berlin. He came third behind Kipchoge and Adola.
Yeah. Oh, well, that shows, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Yeah, people so much into the sport like us don't even know these guys. So what are the general punters going to think?
And we only care about the winner.
Yeah, well, that's the only one written down here, but Tola was there as well. I think Tola was third. He was it was pretty deep, those guys finishing. And I'm not sure who wrote this one down, and Lachlan MacArthur pointed out to me on Twitter after the race, but the winner got $200,000 US for the win. Second, $80,000. Third, $40,000. Fourth, $13,000. Fifth, got $12,000. So he finished 15 seconds back, was it? 14 seconds back. And the difference in prize money between $200,000 and $12,000. Pretty massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
And need to do his strides next year.
More strides at the end of runs.
Practice some kicking.
Have you guys watched the finish, though?
Yeah, I watched it briefly. It was like watching a 1500.
Yeah, it was impressive, but I don't know. Like, we talked about the Norwegian guy the other week about how impressive he looked at the finish and how effortless, and I think the same needs to be said about these guys. Like, they cross the line and they're dancing. Like, I didn't see anyone with hands on hips or anyone laying on the ground. Like, these guys have just went out there and banged out 2:04s of a sprint finish, and they looked like they'd just finished a couple of strides at the end of their session.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit sickening, really. Like, like you said, we're involved in all this running stuff, rah, rah, rah. And then you've got, like, six guys who've never heard of us who run that much faster. It's a different world. It's different levels. And there's so many more levels above where we're at.
Does it make you wonder, question the legitimacy of it? Like, we know Ethiopia's testing isn't 100% up to some of the other countries in the Western world. Like, are there question marks over these performances?
I think there's question marks in general over athletics these days. Like, whether you're African or American or British, Somalian, like, for me, there's question. Like, it's just so much going on. Russian, Chinese, there's so many dodgy nations, and I mean, they're not dodgy as a nation. It's just like their testing protocol isn't good enough, and so it makes it a lot easier to get away with. Like, clearly Kenya, like, you look at the documentaries out there where someone could just walk into a doctor's clinic in the middle of town and ask for EPO or for growth hormone or whatever it is they're getting. You can just do that off the street and it's there, and it's almost like an accepted practice. And then you've got sort of Jama Arden, the Ethiopian agent coach, who's been found with like syringes in the rubbish and in his hotel room and everything, and his athletes getting popped. Like, yeah. You can't look at these races and be fully trusting anymore.
And I think as well, it's just the sheer number of people that are running these times. When, like, you look back 10 years ago and you've got a guy like Gebrselassie, who's, like, arguably one of the best ever, but, you know, now there's, like, how many guys running faster than him? And you can't say that athletes are just better. Like, he was one of the best going around. So the fact that there's just hundreds and hundreds of these guys running, like, 204, 205, it's got to raise some concerns.
Yeah, and the argument would be, oh yeah, but Bekele and Geb, they were 10K runners, but these guys aren't doing 10Ks or 5Ks or whatever because there's no money there. All the money is in the marathon now, so that's why that argument's not valid. Like, Gebrselassie, Bekele, best runners, well, one of the two are probably the best of all time, or the top two. Yet these other guys are running just as fast as them. It's a bit, and people you never heard of.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, like, just doing a bit of research, I just started Googling the top six their names and stuff, and like there was a 335 guy in there for like a 1500. Like they've got that top end speed, but it just seems like, as Julian said, they don't spend the time chasing the 10k and the track Olympic title. They'll just go straight to the roads and dominate the marathons. And when there's 200,000 US prize money up for grabs, can you blame them?
Yeah.
And that's another thing.
You go
thing,
the
like,
money.
Yeah, well, but like when do we, you know, if drugs and doping is coming into sport, obviously, when there's massive amounts of money in it, like when do we just have marathons without prize money and just, you know what I mean? Like is all this doping and the, I guess, the skepticism in the sport, like is all that coming on just because there's too much money involved?
Well, yeah. I mean, you want money because it increases exposure for the sport and it rewards athletics and it rewards athletes and the sport grows because of it. But I think it's just the nature of it. Anytime there's money, there's cheating. And the current way for cheating is doing this, is doping. It's like they can't cut the course. They can't sabotage their competitors. The way they can win falsely is to take drugs. Whereas, like, if you look anywhere in the world with this much money, there's cheating somehow. It's not like athletics has a problem more than other sports. It's just when the money gets this high, that's when the cheating comes out.
Yeah. Rosa Derji Bikili, she won the females race for women under 420, which makes me feel real good. And, yeah, also picked up $200,000 there as well. Sixth place, missed 200,000 by 15 seconds. That's pretty amazing as well.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. ACT.
Good stuff.
Yeah, let's go close to home. Relevant to us. Well, it's not that close to home. Eloise Wellings took the ladies through at the Osaka Women's Marathon in 71:58. As a pacer over there. So she, her Instagram sort of suggested she hit the splits really well. Obviously, they probably said we want 72-minute pace. And she got them there pretty much spot on. She also mentioned that she's looking to continue the race in the future or something along those lines. She basically dropped a hint about stepping up to a marathon. So that's pretty cool and exciting. Wonder what she could do first up.
So she hasn't been picked in the Commonwealth Games team yet for the 10K, has she?
No, she hasn't.
Just Celia, yeah. So she's still waiting on that second or third spot there. She does that every year, doesn't she? Paces that?
I don't know. This is the first time I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Her Instagram says, I hauled the desired splits. 71:58 through halfway. Soon enough, I'll keep going.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think other years there's been a half marathon that she's raced over there. So I don't think she's paced a marathon before, but I know that she normally goes to Japan and races a half. So
watch your space.
Go on.
Oh, I'm just like, given her pedigree in other distances, she could walk right into that top sort of three Australian. I mean, it's a bit hard to sort of suggest that early, but she's got the pedigree to really push the envelope there.
72. Is that 72 going flat out, though? Like, would she have been pretty pushed to take him through in 72? Like, she's got to stay out there for another 72 to be Lisa Waitman kind of timing?
You ain't training for it, though. Like, it's just what she's done. I don't know. We don't know. Yeah. We didn't see her run.
It's an interesting one, the relationship between the half and the full anyway, isn't it? Like, it just sometimes doesn't translate.
It is tricky. A lot of people get stuck there, whether it's through wrong training, different physiology, they're doing it too late in their career when they did a half early in their career. There's a lot of reasons why, I reckon.
Yeah, talk to Tedesse about that. You know, the guy from Eritrea, the world record holder for the half?
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
We're getting off track a bit here. Brad, tell me about the ACT Championships.
Yeah, so just a bit of track news. I guess the highlights there. So I went out on the Friday night and watched the men's and women's 1500s. So we had a couple of B Commonwealth Games B qualifiers. In James Hansen won the men's in 3:39.39, and Rory Hunter, who Aussie guy that was over at college for a while, he's now based in Canberra training with Dick Telford. He finished second in 3:40.56, so they were both B qualifiers. And then in the women's, Lyndon Hall ran a B qualifier of 4:09.32. And then on the Saturday night, I didn't go out, but I watched the live stream, and it was a cracking race. Luke Matthews won in 1:45.83, and Jeff Risley was second in 1:46.35, and they're both Commonwealth Games A qualifying time. So phenomenal race, seven guys under 1:48 in that race. And then just quickly in the women's 800, Georgia Griffith, who's already got, I think, multiple A qualifiers, or at least one, she won the women's 800 in 2:02.16. So that's a bit of track news. But it was a really good atmosphere out there. Like, ACT champs normally gets no one, but I think because it's a short season and Comm Games trials are just around the corner, there was a lot of the stars came out. So, like, Jack Hale was down, and Sally Pearson was running the hurdle. So it was a good weekend.
Yeah, good one. Bit of news there to fill people in. What about this listener question? I like it. Comes in from Sam Agnew. He sent this one through to the Facebook page, I think. So thanks, Sam, for that one. Here it goes. How do you guys go about making the transition from higher volume training, such as that, the one that you would do for the 10K marathon kind of thing, back to hitting up some shorter stuff on the track, like 3Ks and 5Ks? Well, we've all kind of done this, haven't we? We kind of went to Berlin and ran our marathons and then come back and hit some 5Ks and some sharper stuff. So I think we're well qualified to answer this one.
Yeah, we've probably done it all a little differently. Like, I think the volume of training, like, maybe it can vary for different people, but I still think 3 and 5K training requires pretty high volume. So I don't think that changes, like, dramatically, or doesn't for me anyway, maybe only by, like, 30K a week. It's just the sessions you're doing, those long sessions versus the shorter ones for the 3 to 5K. So I've when you're younger, the speed and those maybe fast twitch muscle fibers, they've got a bit more memory about them, maybe. Like, you can find them a lot easier when you need them straight off the back of marathons, or when you're coming back from injury or something. It's like the speed stays with you a lot more easily. But what I've noticed lately is coming from the marathon, like a big long marathon build up, it's just I'm finding it really hard to get fast again, and it's taking a lot longer or a lot more time on the track, sort of specifically working on it to get the leg speed back. So I was struggling with this when I was late last year, around early November. And what I did was instead of doing more sessions out, like on dirt paths or on the road, I decided to do more stuff on the track. So I would go to the track twice a week instead of once a week, and you can get your turnover a lot quicker down on the track. You can actually run faster. So I needed to practice running at those speeds rather than sort of simulating it by doing hill reps or trying to stay off the track, because some people might get injured on there. I needed to go to the track to get fast again. So that's what I did. I increased time, basically running 200s and 300s, maybe some 400 meter sessions. I did more short, sharp hill repeats, so working on, like, true speed. There's definitely some sort of benefit to working on your explosive stuff in the gym if you really want to get proper speed up. So, like, heavier weights and fast, poppy movements in the gym. That's my answer.
Good answer. Brad, what do you do?
I think you don't necessarily lose that much speed training for a marathon. Like, you look at guys like Brad Milosevic and Jack Colreby. And, like, I think Jack Colreby ran a 5K PB last week. And, you know, you'd say that he's now a marathoner, not a 5K runner. And even myself, I've run pretty similar over 5K park runs when I've been training for a 5K compared to now training for a marathon. I think, like, all you really need is maybe some, like, quicker 200s, more for the turnover type stuff. And maybe if you're going shorter than 5K, I think the change is maybe the energy system. So with the longer stuff, you probably don't have that, like, that anaerobic capacity, that lactic sort of, like, threshold. So I think a bit more lactic work is important. But I think what you're doing, Julian, where you are running, I guess, goal sort of 3K, 5K pace, but giving yourself good recoveries in between. I think if you're fit, if you come off a marathon build-up, you can afford to have a few of those sessions where you run fast with good form, but you give yourself good amounts of recovery just to get that sort of neuromuscular training.
So, yeah, you can't. Yeah. You need to practice running fast rather than, like, doing fartleks or something where you can't actually do the fast reps. Like, you might do a short workout, but that doesn't mean you're doing fast training. It just means that your session's short. So there's different levels as well. Like, there's speed training, which is pure speed, which is 80 meter repeats, or hundreds, 150s, where you might, like, take 3 or 4 minutes rest between them. Not enough distance runners do that, I don't think. We do it, Brad, when we do our hill reps, it's the same sort of thing. 10-second hard repeats uphill with a slow walk or a slow jog downhill. And then there is then we start to push the reps out, and you start to do more anaerobic stuff like the 200s and 300s that needs proper rest between them. Otherwise, your quality of session goes down. So what I see is too many people, exactly what you said, do the rep and then don't let their heart rate get down enough, or don't let everything recover and start on their second rep. And you think, you're not achieving what you're supposed to here. You're supposed to be hitting splits that correspond to something.
Yeah. And also, I think it depends on how you train for your marathon as well. If you're a guy that doesn't do any speed work at all during your marathon prep, then you're probably going to struggle a little bit. Whereas all three of us, we still have at least one session a fortnight where you're running, you know, some stuff at sub 3 minute K pace. So whatever you're doing that, or whatever you're doing your hill sprints, or even strides a couple of times a week in marathon training, you're never too far away from speed work.
Yeah. And it's actually an enjoyable time in your training block, I think, as well, when you step down to that shorter stuff. And I don't know about you guys, but I love getting on the track after doing some marathon and the long fartleks and the long tempos and just letting it rip for some 400s and 200s, because I think mentally, like, when you've come from marathon work, doing some 400s doesn't take much mental effort at all.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's fun. Good. Hope they've answered your question there, Sam. I didn't do much talking then, but I think the boys covered it really well. Moose on the loose for this week. Julian, what do you got?
It's actually not that much of a topic that I get super. It's not an angry topic, just more of like a little annoyance. And funnily enough, Brad sort of had a bit of an incident of it during the week, which I missed. This is what he was referring to. So he saw this written down and he's like, "Oh, are you having a go at me for doing this?" And I hadn't seen this run that he'd posted, which was post-session jog. So basically, it's the issue is if someone goes out and runs maybe an easy run, right, and they come back and it's a pretty good run, maybe it's like 30K at 4:05 for them. Let's use Brad as the example, 40, because it's convenient. Say he runs a 40K run at 4 minute K pace, and everyone's like, "Whoa, that's pretty good. It was hilly, it was hot, you smashed it." And Brad's like, and he's named it 40K super easy. And everyone's like, "Oh, that's amazing, you did it, and it was super easy." When it was actually a pretty tough run. But
can I interrupt that? Because what about it with Brad, though? Because he does pretty much do that, but his average heart rate's like 133. So isn't it like an easy run?
I'm not specifically having – this is Brad as an example.
Well, you picked the wrong guy to be an example.
Oh, well –
pick it even
though. That's all right. It's all right.
Keep going.
I know I'm in terrible shape. It's all right. I'm trying to make it appear that I'm fit.
So you're talking about an unfit Brad.
Simon goes out, right? Simon Smith goes out, and Simon runs a race. He runs a race, like a 10K road race, and he runs the first K. It's too hard.
Hang on, does he have gastro, or does he like fit?
He's all right. He's going well. He came in with this. He tapered a little bit for it. So he runs the first few K hard. You can see himself blowing up. He runs average time at the end. Finishes, does the old jog off from the finish line. Hey, that wasn't even that bad. Names his run on Strava, 10K tempo run or 10K threshold run. When you look at his splits and he's actually cooked himself. Or when someone goes out and was like, this felt easy. And you're looking at their heart rate data going, 180, 182, that wasn't easy. Why is he saying it's easy? Well, the reason that he's saying it's easy is because he wants people to think that he's an amazing athlete. Yet, and they do, they get sucked into it. Like a lot of people would go, oh man, that guy ran that and it felt easy to him. He's a freak. How good is he? Let's comment. Wow, that was easy. You're amazing. That's the reason people do it, and that's why it annoys me. And it doesn't really annoy me that much, but I know that some people do get annoyed with that. And there are certain people that do it like day in, day out, and they can't ever accept that they have a bad race. So they name it a threshold immediately after. And that, like, that's the one that grinds my gears. Or if they go out, they come into the race and they see a bit of competition around and they go, ah, I think I'll just do a tempo today instead of racing because they don't put themselves on the line. That's a really shit one. Like, I'd rather come fifth and do a tempo than come second and get made to look like second rate by some other good guy in the race. Like, that happens a lot.
Or calling it their B race. It's not their A race. Their A race is a few weeks away.
Exactly. Don't worry about that, guys. That was a B race. I did it in fourth gear.
I'm not sure yet if B was an A or a B for me.
you get the beauty is you get to decide halfway.
Yeah, you tell yourself that when you start hitting the wall. Oh, it's only a B race.
30K. B race. Dramas. Threshold. I'll just tempo this in now. 30K at hard, 10K at threshold.
Not a bad strategy.
I didn't offend anyone tonight, hopefully.
I like it.
Nah. Just me.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Happy with that. Well, John Crichton gets offended by your running too, obviously.
I think the proof is in the heart rate here, though. Like, so Brad's kind of, he's okay running that fast because his heart rate's still low. It's these other people, like I'm just scrolling through Strava now, someone that I know does their long runs too fast, like too quick for them. And the average heart rate's, 150 for their long run on a Sunday. Like, you're tempoing it. Just back off your long run.
That is a tempo, yeah. Good tempo.
Yeah.
Just like Sean's comment on Brad's nice post-session session. Bradley feels good. He's fit. I mean, for a 2:14 guy, that's not a hard one. So we'll all look back at this in a few weeks and go, oh, shit. Maybe he's jogging.
Hey, Julian, marathon's 42K, not 40. maybe you're a 2:14 guy for 40K.
So you reckon you're a 2:14:50 guy?
He did name it. He just said he wanted to smash his legs for a few extra. But then he went to the old comment on Strava. He should have named it, Brad, smashing my legs in the warm down. Being honest with everyone.
All right.
Come on, Brad.
You're on a running podcast. You've got to explain your week every week.
All right. I'll explain what happens with those runs. So the warm up is obviously hard. Well, I run sort of 4:20s, 4:25s for my warm up because I'm obviously straight out of bed and not warm. Then I do a session where I've run an hour at 317s, 318s. So to drop it back to 4-minute Ks when I'm not completely cooked from the session, probably, like, yeah, the heart rate's high because I guess I've been working hard for an hour, but perceived effort's actually not that hard compared to the 320s that I've been running. Does that make sense?
So, sort of.
Yeah, so it's not like a cool-down shuffle, but it's just, all right, I'm just running. Like, I'd just say it was just a steady run. It's not certainly not a cool-down, but it feels, yeah, it feels a lot easier because you've been running, you know, quite hard for an hour. So compared to that, it feels easy.
So, tell that to your coach, mate, not us.
Yeah. It's all right, mate. I backed it up okay a couple of days later.
All
good.
Yeah, when he smashes both our PBs in BWAR in 3 weeks, we might 4 weeks, whatever it is, we might be in a bit of trouble here. But that's it. That's this week's show over. Julian, interview us or lead us into the interview. Very good one this week. I like this. You say some stuff about it, then I'll give you my feedback as well.
Well, I just had a sit down with Ali Pashley. O'Kane, she's married now, Ali Pashley. She's been selected in the half marathon team for the world championships, world half marathon champs. So she gives us a bit of a rundown on the course, the race, what AA do to help her out. And then we talk about, I coach Ali, so we talk about her training a little bit leading in and my battles trying to change her from a booze hound to a world-class runner.
And what I love about this one, Brad, I think you'll agree when you listen to it, it feels like those two are just having a conversation and we've just, like, somehow got the audio from it and we just get to listen in. But, like, it's a really good training. It really gives you a good insight into the relationship between coach and athlete. I loved it. I went for a run, 45-minute run. The interview goes for 45 minutes and it just went so fast just because I was so engaged by the conversation. And pretty similar to you and Sean a couple of weeks back. It just feels like two people talking to each other about running, not someone trying to interview someone else to get certain answers out of them. It's really genuine, and I think the listeners will really love it. And, it's really authentic and real.
Cool. Thanks, mate.
The stuff we want to be producing here on Inside Running Podcast. Before we leave, we're on Instagram. Thanks to Harrison Malone, who's set up our Instagram account. He's looking after that one. He knows much more about social media than all three of us boys do. We're going all right. We've got 100 followers already, fellas. You know that?
That's more than my personal account already.
Yeah, he's doing
that
well.
For like 6 years.
He's building the audience. Give Julian a follow while you're there if you want to. And thanks again to Ross Pentland, who's putting our notes onto Runner's Tribe for the article each week, and those people at Runner's Tribe supporting us. We really appreciate that. It's time to go, boys. Give me a quick summary of what's coming up in the next week for you two boys.
Basically, the only thing I've got I'm on a fartlek, 2 hours midweek, and then my, I guess, sort of big marathon sort of test session on Saturday's 2x12K with a 3-minute recovery in between. At around marathon pace, hopefully.
Cool. That's a good session. Hey, what's the bet, Joel? And he absolutely smashes his PB for monofartlek.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends how hot it is. Some of these sessions too, I'm not sure about this pond either.
I reckon the pond's a bit short as well. Viv,
got a bit of industrial estate about this pond.
I've gone from the industrial estate. I've got bad memories out there now too, after it cooked me car as well. What about Viv just getting on the bike, just helping him out as well? She's really, you've taken her out for dinner or something to pay her back for that, Brad?
I look after her in other ways.
He let her give his legs a like a calf massage or something.
She's a good girl because she's not running quite as much since Berlin, so she's happy to help out. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Julian, what are you doing? Recovered? You're all good now? No more gastro?
I should be. Yeah, did a long run today. Felt all right. I mean, I felt horrible, but I didn't have to use a bath. Oh, well, more than one bathroom, which was good. I just do a bit of training, nothing special. Oh, wait, the running company Ballarat is receiving the Nike Epic React Flyknit. Nike,
a lot of marketing around this shoe.
Yeah, so check out our Facebook page. We've got one colour of each of the men's and ladies up there, but we are getting another all black as well. We can talk about this next week. We'll talk about the shoe next week. There's a bit of hype about it.
Yeah, it's good. I've just got a pretty standard week, nothing special at my end. Back to school, as we said, and just putting a few finishing touches on this mini marathon build-up. Looking forward to it. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you again next week. Enjoy this interview with Ali Pashley and Julian, talking all things training in her lead-up to the World Championships half marathon in Valencia.
All right, Ali, thanks for having me here in your house at Torquay.
No worries.
Is it your house?
No. I wish. It's actually my parents' house, but we've just moved back in with our parents temporarily, we all do when we're nearing 30.
That's what all the pro runners do, isn't it? Save money, get cheap meals.
Yeah.
It is pretty nice, though. We're looking out over the beach at Torquay. It's 40 degree day, so it's a pretty good spot to be.
Yeah.
You do a lot of training down there, obviously.
Yeah. So most of my runs happen around here. I usually start here and run along the cliff track out to Bells, or if I'm avoiding hills, I tend to go the other way towards Bowen Heads. But we're pretty lucky down here. There's heaps of really cool tracks to run on, and
good
footy oval for sessions.
Yeah. So you've never been on this particular podcast, but you were on Brady's Tell Me Your Tales. So a lot of people probably would have heard your background. But let's just update people that, because I think that was before you had a lot of sort of big steps with your running. So just give someone a background maybe on the last year of your running, the big results,
Okay. So the last year has, I guess, probably been my best year so far with running. I started training a little bit more consistently and seriously, and I had, I think I ran PBs basically over every distance in the last 12 months.
What are the PBs?
So 5K, I ran 16:14, 10K, 33:58, half marathon 1:13:45, and then the marathon I did a 2:35:53.
Yeah.
So they all happened in the last 12 months, and yeah, it's been a good year.
Yeah, and it's sort of these sort of times have stepped you up really into the national level, which we'll touch on later a little bit, but for now, like, you've obviously, we announced it in the last week or the week before's podcast that you've been selected for the World Half Marathon Championships. So how did that process all come about, and did they select you off which races? What did you have to provide to get selected?
So I think they use a number of different races to select that team. Obviously one of the big ones was the Commonwealth Games athletes weren't eligible to make that team. So I think they were sort of looking a little bit at people that were running marathons and running the qualifying time but not getting selected for the Comm Games as such. And I think in the selection criteria it said that they're using it as a team for future marathon runners. Or people stepping up to the distance. And then I think you had to nominate yourself, and they took into account a few different races, like the Australian Half Marathon Championships, which I didn't run in that one.
Which one? Where was that at?
I think that was at the Sunshine Coast.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then I think just your half marathon time that you'd run within the last 12 months or 18 months or so, which I only really ran one last year at the Gold Coast, which was a big PB for me. And then Zatopek was another selection race, which I got food poisoning the day before and couldn't actually run, which I was really disappointed about, and I was quite worried that that might affect my ability to be selected into this team. But luckily they let me go on that one.
Yeah, well, we had a chat about it and we sort of worked out it would have been worse for you to go out and run
a super slow time, use your sickness as an excuse, or pull out halfway using that excuse. It certainly looks better on paper from a selector's eyes. In my mind, if I was selecting teams, to see that you didn't start due to illness like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I felt rotten. I drove up there that night and I tried to warm up and I couldn't even jog, let alone think about trying to run 25 laps. Yeah. Hard, so I think that was the right call. Yeah. It would have been a pretty embarrassing run if I'd attempted it. So.
And it's not park run or something, like these are Zatopek 10,000 metres and you know there's nowhere to hide. If things go wrong, it's a pretty harsh atmosphere out there on the track, 10,000 metres.
Definitely, so, 10Ks, yeah. you can't wing 10Ks either.
No, so. It was a good call, I reckon. So after that, the team got selected mid-December. How did you get informed?
So I got a phone call from Craig Hilliard.
Yeah.
First of all, he called me to say that I hadn't been selected in the Commonwealth Games team, but then he called me a few days later to say that I made the team for Valencia. And then we got a couple of emails and stuff just with a little bit of early information.
Yeah.
About the team, but yeah.
Cool. Did he tell you who else was on the team or anything like that?
No, he didn't. And actually, I didn't even ask at the time because I was pretty excited when I got the phone call, and
yep.
I didn't really think to ask. I had a rough idea of who might be, just going by the marathon selection for the Comm Games would have been such a tough one for them, and there are a couple of girls that were really, you know, really close to being picked. Yeah. And any other year probably would have been picked, so I had a fair idea that Millie and Sinead would be on the team, but I wasn't sure, because they can take up to 5 runners, I wasn't sure if they were going to take a full team or what, so I actually, yeah, I had no idea who else would be in it.
Yeah, well, it is exciting, and you've made Australian teams in mountain running. Why do you laugh?
Because I'm not very good at running up hills.
Yeah. You're suggesting it's maybe an easier team?
No. I did actually walk, though, at the World Mountain Running Championships, so I think I got pretty lucky to make that team.
Yeah, but you run World Uni Cross, is that right?
Yeah. That's it.
I guess nothing on the level like what you've made, so.
Yeah, so this is my first senior Australian team.
Yeah.
And yeah, World Uni Cross was really good fun. We went to Poland for that. But yeah, this will be, I think, an interesting experience again, probably next level as far as the seriousness of the athletes I'll be running with and against.
Yeah, I mean, it's a global scale, it's a world scale, it gets a lot of attention, and I know it's where some girls have some big breakthroughs, like another team member, Millie Clark, ran a very good race there 1 year, almost like a breakout race.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's on the team, so the other girls, like, have you guys been in contact with each other?
Yeah, I've been in contact with Sinead after we got picked in the team. She sent me a message, and we know each other quite well just through running against each other, and we've been on a couple of Vic teams before together, and yeah, so I know Sinead really well. I haven't really come across Millie much other than I've raced against her a few times, but
yeah,
it should be good fun.
Yeah, and training-wise with Sinead, are you guys looking to train together or do some runs or?
I'm not sure. I haven't really spoken to her about that, but maybe as it gets closer we could look at doing a few long sessions together.
Yep.
She's probably too fast for me, so.
Mm. Well, what's her half marathon PB?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it would be faster than mine, though.
Well, so with the race, what's your goal for the event?
I would love to run another PB. I'm not sure how much of a PB I have in me, but I'd like to think that I am a little bit fitter than this time last year. And yeah, I really don't know what to expect as far as placing or anything like that goes. I'm just excited to be going, and I'll just have a crack and see what happens. I think it's a really flat, fast course, so
yep.
That should be conducive to fast times.
Has there been any other events on the course? Like, is this the course for some Spanish half marathon?
Yeah, so I think they have the Valencia half marathon every year, which apparently I think was where the Kenyan girl Jepkosgei broke the world record last year.
Yeah.
And apparently they've actually changed it to make it even faster. So I think it used to have lots of turns and twists in it, and they've actually made it more of a loop course. So they're saying that it's going to be faster than the usual one, which, yeah, I think she ran under 105 on the old one. So
scary.
Pretty crazy.
And go so that's, I mean, that's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting.
Like, if you can't, that sounds like this. How about the weather? Any excuses there?
No, I don't think so. I think it, I had a look at the climate for March in Valencia, and it's pretty mild, I think sort of low to mid-20s during the day. And they're actually running the race at night, which is interesting. Oh, yeah. So I think our race is at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, which they said it's cooler in the evenings. I'm not sure how cool it'll be. It might be 16 or 17 degrees. But coming off Australian summer is probably perfect. We should all be well prepared for the heat, especially with days like today.
Sounds like they're setting it up for a world record or something, like some really fast times.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think I was actually reading the other day that Kenya announced their team, and they've got the female world record holder, Jocelyn Jepkosgei, is actually running. And the man who won the New York Marathon last year, he's in the men's team as well. So I think they'll be, looking for some really fast times.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool to be a part of, even though I won't see them because they'll be
Do you run together? Like, they won't go together, surely.
The men and women.
Men and women.
Nah, actually, I think the men might even be after us. Yeah. But I won't see the girl anyway.
That'd be pretty quick.
Probably 60, not after
the gun. 65 minutes.
Yeah.
We win most male marathons around the world, or halves.
Yeah.
So with AA, like, they obviously called you to let you know. They sent a bit of information. What else, how else do they support you for the race?
So they organise our flights and accommodation and uniform and things like that, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So no, there's no cash support?
No, I don't. Not as far as I know.
No.
Not for me anyway.
Yeah. So no training camp beforehand?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah.
That would be good. I could get a bit of time off work, but
yeah.
I haven't heard anything about a training camp.
There is one for, they do one for the Olympics and the World Champs, they do. And they do one for the Commonwealth Games.
I think they do one for the Commonwealth Games as well. Yeah, I think for the big major events they do, but I'm not sure if this one gets a training camp.
Yeah, and uniform, like, do they give you options, like crop top, you can pick your...
Yeah, I think you can choose what you want to race in.
All right, cool.
Yeah. So,
who sponsors that? Is there a brand sponsor?
Or? I'm not sure. I think often it changes with different events, so I'm not sure who's sponsoring it for this one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So the evening race means you've run Zatopek before, but it's a little different because you're going for longer. You need to, like, it's quite hard to eat for a night event, I think, because, like, it's great to be able to sleep all night, not have to worry about that.
Yeah.
When you're up and about, do you have sort of a daily diet for a night race?
Not really. Probably, I guess I'll stick to pretty plain sort of foods. My gut's not really that sensitive. I don't tend to have too much trouble with what I eat before the race, and I have a bit of a tendency to put off my Sunday long run till the afternoon, so I should be well trained for the night race.
You did that for a reason. It wasn't the hangovers.
Yeah, no, it was all for this. I guess I'd try and keep it pretty simple. Normally, if I was just going out for a training run at night, I would eat probably whatever I wanted during the day, but I guess it's a tricky... It's because it's only a half marathon, it takes that real carbo loading aspect out of it slightly, which is helpful, but you wouldn't want to eat anything that you might be too sensitive to the day of a race.
What about the accommodation? Do you stay in is it like a village atmosphere or a hotel?
Yeah, I think they've got a couple of team hotels which are right by the start and finish line.
Yeah.
So that'll be quite fun staying with all the other teams, and we haven't been told which ones exactly or anything yet, but I'm sure we'll find that out as it gets closer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it should be fun. And look, we're there for the whole week before, I guess getting used to the time difference and acclimatising and things like that. So I'm sure we'll get to explore the course and get used to it.
Have you been to Valencia?
Yeah, I have actually. The last time I went there was a bit different. I went for the Tomatina, the tomato throwing drinking festival.
So that doesn't surprise me
at all. I didn't go for any runs there, but I did see like the area where the start and finish line is. I think there are some big museums sort of in the middle of the city with water features and fountains, and we stayed quite close to that. So I think that's where the start and finish line is. So
yeah,
I did see that.
Yeah, you remember.
Yeah. This will be a different experience.
Well, that's Brady. A healthier one. Brady's mentioned it's his favourite city.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've got a feeling he wasn't involved in that drinking.
Yeah, probably not.
So he probably ran there and enjoyed it.
Yeah, I actually didn't even, like, I don't even think we went anywhere else other than to the festival.
Yeah. Do we know if there'll be any coverage, like TV, broadcast, streaming, anything like that?
I'm not sure. I'd say it'll probably be streamed online somewhere. I don't know if they do coverage on any of the Foxtel channels.
Eurosport sometimes gets it.
Eurosport often has the athletics. They had the World University Games and things like that. So
we should get it.
Yeah, I do like watching those kind of events, but sometimes they get missed. Some of the big marathons they have, some they don't.
Yeah.
But usually, if you've got a VPN for another country, you can usually access.
I'm going to have to explain something.
A VPN?
VPN.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I haven't worked that out. I'll just buy every single subscription I can and hope I find something that works.
You're wasting your money.
Yeah. When is it? How many weeks now?
So it's March the 24th, which is... you tell me, coach.
I can nearly show you. Yeah.
You're doing my programs.
Well,
about 2 months away.
Maybe nine weeks. Yeah, it's something like that.
8 weeks of training, 1 week of tapering, or 2 weeks of tapering?
Well, I think 2 weeks. Actually, this is the second part of the interview. We have Brad and Brady interested in a little bit more training related stuff.
Okay.
So they had some questions for both of us, because we haven't mentioned it yet, but I've been coaching you for a year?
A bit longer, probably nearly 2 years, maybe?
Oh, yeah, because of Melbourne. You've run Melbourne Marathon, and that was 2015.
16.
Oh, 16, yeah.
But you started coaching me.
Yeah, that's when you started to get a little bit more switched on.
Yeah.
The coaching athlete relationship and how does it work in our case? Like, I live in Ballarat and you're in Torquay. I'm not on the track with a stopwatch. So it's been a pretty loose arrangement where I'll provide a monthly program for Ali. In the past, there hasn't really been much sort of back and forth in terms of Ali reporting back on how the workout went. I can see a little bit on Strava.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sort of tell me.
I can tell
that
he watches my Strava like a hawk to make sure I'm doing what he says.
I just watch Strava like a hawk in general. But the way that it works out is I'll send a program through, and this is how it probably will work out a little bit more closely. In order to gauge how Ali's going with her training, she'll just let me know after each workout how she's how the paces feel, how the rest felt, whether she was comfortable, and from there we can sort of gauge how her fitness is going and whether we need to tweak a few things, because it's getting a little more important as she steps up to this next level that we monitor things like overtraining her or cooking her in the heat, maybe working too much on it on the speed side of things, and she might feel like she needs some more longer stuff. They're the sort of things that probably get a little bit more important, like the one percenters and the monitoring and tweaking as you step up to international. Well, she's international level racing now, and I mean, ideally for me, I would love to be on the track watching the workouts, but it's just. It's not possible. Have you felt any limitations with this system?
No, not at all. I've never even really actually thought about that. But I think it works well. The beauty of Strava is that you can see pretty much exactly what I'm doing, and you can, aside from being able to tell how I felt whilst doing it, which I probably do need to give you a bit more feedback on that. I tend to only tell you when it was horrible.
You can see in the title of the run normally if it goes well, if it doesn't.
I think we're all adults. We probably don't need people standing there with the stopwatch yelling at us. We've got GPS watches which can tell us how we're going with pace and things like that. And Julian's pretty good at asking how things went or commenting on sessions and things like that, and I've probably been a little bit conscious of not pestering him with questions and comments on the sessions and that sort of thing, but I probably do need to do that a little more now as it gets a bit more serious.
The point of being on the track as a coach or being in presence at training is to almost sort of pull you back when you can see things are going over the edge. If it's not working out, they're like a security blanket or a break, really, that you would never press yourself because you want to finish that workout.
And
a lot of people get caught up, I think, in seeing a workout on paper. And we know someone who knows this. seeing a workout on paper and basically hitting it to a letter. And if a time, a second off in one of the reps, then not successful all the workout.
Yeah.
Where I think having like a coach on, like if I was getting coached, I'd like someone there to basically almost oversee it and make sure that you don't run yourself down or put yourself into trouble.
I don't think I'm really one of... I hear people talk about that all the time, listening to podcasts and things about that, how they have a tendency to overtrain and overcook themselves and things like that. I don't really think I work that way. I'm probably on the lazier side where if, I'm really battling or I'm not feeling good, or then I either just don't do the workout or I change it, or which probably is also to my detriment, actually definitely is. But maybe, is probably why I don't necessarily need you there making sure that I'm not overdoing it.
The changes that are getting made off the cuff, it's not bad so much unless it starts to interfere with the weekly and then the monthly and then the long-term structures.
Yeah.
And so that can happen, like if someone's trying to stuff a workout into a long run and combine it.
I have done that a few times.
Yeah, well, that's the next question. What's the silliest thing that you've done that's not been to plan? Because I can think of a few good ones.
So, myself and Jared McMullen, who's one of my training partners down here, also coached by Julian, we have a tendency to every now and then go back to our coachless rebel days and change our programs. And we thought at the Ballarat 15K road race last year, we thought, hey, let's not do a long run tomorrow. Let's combine our long run and our race today so that tomorrow we can just relax and do nothing. So we warmed up maybe 4Ks, did the 15K road race hard, and he was actually going to tempo it, and then I said to him, nah, I'm not going to tempo it, I'm going to race it. And then he's so competitive with me that he raced it also. And then after that we ran another 20Ks because we were training for Berlin, so we were, I think our long run was meant to be 38Ks or something, so we did that. And, oh, man, that was so stupid. I was, the last 10Ks, I think I was, that's almost the most exhausted I've ever been. I could hardly run. I couldn't talk during the run, which is quite rare for me. I was, like, blurry-eyed. But we got in trouble for that. And then we thought, that was really stupid. Let's not do that again.
Yeah, I remember that one. pretty clearly.
Yeah.
Because I can remember my workout. Like, after the race, I could barely run 3K as a cool down.
Yeah.
But you're not supposed to be able to run much after a race.
Yeah. Well, we went running very fast.
You made it out half an hour, but couldn't get back.
Yeah. That was the thing, actually. We got so far away feeling okay that it was then the way back. And as most people know what Ballarat weather's like, it was horrible weather, mm-hmm. windy. And then, yeah.
Yep. And then, that's a classic. I'm sure there's a few of those.
Bree warned me that night, actually. She's like, oh, you're in trouble. I think she'd heard Julian mouthing off about us and then, yeah.
I think Jared copped the blame for it.
Yeah, Jared copped the blame. He's usually the one making me do the stupid things like that.
Oh, that was a good one, though. Anyway, so what will be some key workouts in the lead-in? Well, you've seen your program, but basically the way that I'll explain sort of how I approach half marathon training, yep. because you're going to be running for around 70 minutes or so. It's pretty...
70?
Yeah, well...
a bit more.
Well, yeah, we can work that out. We'll see what happens, but around that sort of time, for anyone, 60 to 80 minutes, that sort of runner, we'll be running at around that threshold. So it's a lot of threshold-style training. We do a lot of workouts that you would sort of see in 10K programs or at the very early, the earlier stages of marathon training. So you've already been doing quite a bit. You've been doing some 5 and 10K stuff, so there's been a threshold workout in there, on paper anyway, quite regularly. Whether they get done or not, that's the next question. So for a for example, here's a couple of workouts that Ali has coming up that we might consider half marathon specific. So she'll start by running a 12K run, but she'll alternate 1 kilometre split, so she'll run a 3:25 and then her next K will be a 4 minute. So it's basically a fartlek with an on and an off, and the on will be around the pace that we think she could run the half in. The off will be back down where she'll recover, but she's still steady. That'll progress. It's pretty simple. We'll reduce the amount of reps, but she'll increase the distance of the rep, and so she'll go to 4x2K at 3:25. And then we'll have a 1K float in the middle at 4 minutes. Now this, she's already done a few weeks earlier if we go back, or she hasn't done this earlier, but the next one she's done earlier. So she'll end up coming back post, well, I haven't written this one in her program yet, but she'll end up running a 3x3K at around the same pace with a float. And she ran that workout with 4 minute rest a few weeks ago, and she ran it slightly slower and nailed it. So as we get more specific, she'll be a little bit fitter and she'll be able to handle the workouts a little better. So they'll progress in that manner. We'll still keep some speed work in there. So originally, Ali was planning on running the national 5,000 metres. And so we did quite a bit of 5K work. So a lot of faster stuff on the track, some genuine sort of speed hill reps, which will be in her program continuing, but she did a little bit more faster work on the track. She lowered her long runs a little bit, so less in them. But we've sort of decided against that. So, like, why did we work out? Why did we go against the five?
I think, well, one of the reasons is it's during the week.
Yeah.
And that's quite hard for me to get time off work, especially as I've got a bit of time off coming up. And then we also thought that a 10K road race, because I did a lot of 10K training in prep for Zatopek and then didn't actually get to run it, which I was quite disappointed about, we thought we might do a 10K road race instead, which is also probably more half marathon specific in the lead up. So we're going to do that in February at Run the Bridge in Hobart.
Yeah. It did get a bit more specific. And you weren't selected for that team. Like, we thought you had a pretty good chance. So we sort of...
Yeah, that was...
We had to kind of hedge our bets a little bit. We'll do it. Yeah. And once you were selected. And when you've sort of even sort of suggested you were getting a bit run down from work, so...
Yeah.
We had to change things around a little bit.
Yeah. A few less races, a bit more training.
Yeah, and that road race, like, it's very specific to the half marathon. And, yeah. Also, there's a lot of road race, like the fast girls, the 5Ks, the steeplers, 15 girls that may have been there in the past running around the bridge are not there because of nationals.
Yeah.
So you might get cashed up if you can beat the other marathoners.
I don't know about that. It is good for me to do some of those races against those fast people.
Though. Yeah.
I tend to hide away from them a bit.
I think it'll be a good indicator. Yeah. So what will the taper look like for the half? The way I think it'll be 2 weeks of taper, and for the last 2 weeks, we can work backwards from the race. Ali will run pretty much every day except for maybe the travel day. So we've got to work that out whenever you're leaving.
Yeah.
The race is on a Saturday evening. On the Wednesday, she'll do a workout that does where she runs a little bit of race pace with no floating, just full rest. So it's not that taxing, but she gets to feel the pace that she's going to run at, basically just find herself a nice rhythm. Remind herself what it feels like after a bit of travel. Hopefully that's after you arrive.
I think we arrive on Sunday.
Oh, cool, yeah.
That's be fine. Good.
And so that Sunday, you won't run a long run 1 week before, so it'll just be maybe a 10-mile run or something instead of your usual 25 to 30K.
Cool.
And then, yeah, probably do a workout on the Friday and the Tuesday of that, because that's more convenient for your work at the moment.
Yeah.
And the Friday workout will be less intense. The Tuesday workout, I reckon we can get some pretty good work in there, maybe like a good confidence building workout. Nothing too stressful, but something that you come away with feeling good.
Yeah, that's always good.
Yeah. And all right, so yeah, that's the taper. It could be different depending on how the next few weeks go, like how much training you get in, whether you got any injuries, how you feel, like you might get sick at a week and miss a week of training. So
yeah,
that's why like the programs don't go longer than a month specifically.
Yeah.
So we can adjust.
Basically, half marathon training looks like almost as much as marathon, but faster.
I don't think so.
It's pretty brutal.
I reckon this looks more like 10K training, but a little longer.
Yeah.
And that's
I guess the race itself is probably the worst distance, isn't it? Or the hardest distance to race.
The half?
Yeah. Oh. I reckon it's the most painful.
Yeah, okay. I've never really done it, so I always felt alright in it.
But really?
It was, yeah. I reckon the 10K on the track's pretty tough.
Geez,
the marathon's just different, though. It's a different beast. The
marathon's just a lot more comfortable than the half.
Yeah, you're comfortable for longer.
A bit uncomfortable the whole time.
Yeah.
Really uncomfortable the last 4 or 5 Ks.
Yeah, especially when you'll be on the red line and
there'll
be so many girls competing around you. Like, you'll be in a pack of probably 30 or something. It will be good. Yeah, I think it'll take away the hurt a little because you'll be like so. There'll be a lot going on.
Yeah. I like those kind of races.
You'll kind of get there to 7K and go, oh shit, this is hurting now. But there's still so much I need to be aware of.
Yeah.
So this is a favourite question of mine. How is the current balance between socialising and training?
Well, it's actually pretty good at the moment. I think I always find this time of year quite hard because especially the last few years we've had a lot of weddings. I probably do less socialising in general, but weekends away with weddings and hens days and things like that, they're not very conducive to long distance running. This summer is better than last summer as far as number of those go.
They're all married already from last summer.
Yeah, exactly, pretty much. that's probably the thing that I've found most tough over the years. I quite like socialising as well. So I used to try and do everything and it didn't really work. I think I actually spoke to Brady about that last time when I was on his Tell Me Your Tales podcast. I used to think, I'll just do everything and it's fine and that's a good way to be, but it really wasn't. They don't go well together. So now I try and probably do a little bit more running, a little bit less socialising. I try and sacrifice things a little bit yeah, there are still some things that I really like to do and events that I like to go to, and my friends are all very social, and compared to them I'm actually nowhere near as social. But yeah.
So do you still attend the parties and the everything and not drink as much, or do you just find a way to sort of say no, leave early? How do you deal with it if you've got 10 friends, they're all getting stuck into the grog, and you're there thinking, shit, I got to go to the World Half Marathon Championships in 2 months.
Yeah. Well, the next 2 months, I've got my best friend's wedding. That's the only real event like that I've got left. I have had a few over the last few months, but yeah, I'm not very good at not going or going home really early. I like to go home earlier than most people, but I also have FOMO, so I don't like to not participate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this is probably, this weekend is a good example. We were actually going to go camping with a group of friends, and in the end we decided to not. We went away to the Grampians by ourselves, which I think was really good because it meant I wasn't drinking and
you nailed a long tempo run. Like, if you have a look at Alex Strava, nailed a long tempo run and then got out 30k on a really hot day, waking up early. Like, there was no chance of that happening anyway.
Nah, so it's the new me.
Yeah. Oh, I was impressed.
Yeah.
I thought, shit, I saw you in Hall's Gap. I'm like, Ellie's got a fucking wedding in Hall's Gap. She's gonna get back at like 8 p.m. and try to do a long run.
Yeah, no, I'm trying really, particularly since making this team, I am actually trying to think a little bit more about those things, because I know that basically if I do go away for a weekend with friends, it's a bit of a write-off. So I need to, do a little bit of socialising, but just rein it in and reduce my alcohol intake.
Yeah. Well, surely, like, being on a world championship team, like, it's the half marathon world champ. That's got to sort of, like, think, got to put, like, an odd flavour to the wine, surely, like, when you're drinking, knowing what's coming up.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think, like, it sounds like I'm a raging party animal, but I'm really actually not. And
compared to a normal runner, you are.
Compared to a normal person, I'm not. But yeah, no, I definitely am. I think if I am out with friends on a weekend, definitely in the back of my mind I'm thinking, oh, I've got to run 26Ks tomorrow morning, and if I don't do it in the morning, am I going to do it? And if I go in the morning, I can go with these people and these people, and I'm going to do it. And it, yeah, I think about that stuff a lot more, and I think I've been a fair bit better lately at doing my long runs and sticking to the program and things like that. So this is, yeah, I know that this is serious and I need to really give it a crack, especially the next couple of months. Might be my only chance ever to represent Australia, so I have to take it seriously and do it properly.
Good to hear. Good to hear. And so you just said this might be the only chance that you can represent Australia. But
yeah.
I pulled up some numbers a few weeks ago and sent them through to you, and it represented, basically it's a list of the top 10 or close to the top 10 Australian marathoners and female marathoners and how long it took them in the marathon before they made their breakthrough. So we have Benita Willis. Her third race was her big breakthrough. Oh, well, she didn't need a breakthrough, but that was her best race. Lisa Ondieki, the fourth race was her best. Lisa Waitman, her fourth marathon is her best. Nikki Carroll, like, her seventh was her best. Kara McCann, it's like her 15th was her best. Kate Smythe, again, maybe 15. Jean Maloney, her fourth. Celia Sullivan, her third. And Jackie Fairweather, her fourth marathon was her best. And at the moment, you've run two marathons and you've dropped 11 minutes from one. So how do you not look at those figures and not find yourself basically at the same page as these girls?
Yeah, That's a hard question to answer. I think those figures actually were quite eye-opening for me, especially some of the progressions that they'd had in time, you know, of almost an hour from some of their first marathons to their PBs. And I think the beauty of the marathon is you really can lower your time significantly just by years of training your body to get used to running a bit faster for a bit longer. And I think it's probably, the best part about it. So hopefully that can happen. I mean, it's probably, you've got the really supernaturally talented Benita Willis's and Lisa Waitman's, and I mean, they started off pretty fast anyway, but it is a good sport for people, I guess, like myself, who maybe aren't quite as naturally gifted, but if you keep working over years and years, you can get quite a bit faster. But it's just like we're in such a strong period of women's marathon running in Australia that there's a lot of girls you have to beat to get on those teams, and it's really good because I think it will make everybody run faster, and it's definitely motivating to see what some of those girls are doing and how quickly they're dropping their times and things like that. But I don't know, it's hard to know how much faster you can run when you finish Berlin and feel like you're about to die.
I think learning the marathon is what you're doing, so every time you do it you start to twig into how to do it a little better. But the way, like you said, oh, these natural talented girls, but to me, and then you say, oh, I don't have the talent, but it's, for me, it's the opposite. You have the talent, but these girls worked. You're working now, and so that's where I'm saying, like, it doesn't happen after 1 year of work, it happens after 4 or 5 years of work, and so that's why it's taken them 4 or 5 marathons to nail it. It's an accumulation of work rather than, oh, you had a great training program leading in.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You have six great training programs and the learning experience from each of them and the accumulation of miles and strength. That's why we see that the fastest after their fifth or sixth marathon.
Yeah.
I feel like you should look at this and think, geez, I could be on that list and I could work like... That, to me, this is where I get a little, not frustrated, but if someone else looked at this and would go, holy shit, Ali, you're on the same path as them, like, you need to do what they did, which is...
Run a lot.
Yeah, run a lot. I mean...
Give up work?
There's some... I don't think so. Lisa Waitman,
a lot of those girls work as well, which is very impressive. Yep. I'm amazed by how they do that.
But yeah, I think like even just talking to some of them, like Jin, Kate, Lisa, girls that you know have sort of come from working backgrounds as well.
Yeah.
And then you can,
they're tough.
Yeah, tough girls.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, you're gonna run the bridge. That'll be your next race before Valencia. Anything else happening in the next few weeks apart from your weddings and
I don't think so. Am I doing any other races before I go?
I don't think so, not unless you pull one out without telling me like a few weeks ago.
Mount Surf, that was on my program, wasn't it? I think just run the bridge, and then I used to do a lot of races, and I think it probably was slightly to the detriment of training, so I'm quite happy with just one road race between now and then and lots of good training. I know sometimes you feel a bit, you don't really know where your form's at without testing it out, but hopefully if I stick to the program I should just be confident in that and go from there. Too many other things going on, I don't think.
Well, if you want to follow Ali's lead in, she's on Strava, so that might get you a few more followers.
Yeah, that'd be good. I don't have many...
Your skin can bring you so much pain. say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place on the cover of my skin. Doesn't matter.